Imagine this. You wake up to an emergency, maybe a wildfire moving fast, or a huge infrastructure failure, a public safety threat. For millions of us, the alert that makes the difference is that automated call or text from a local agency. You rely on the Code Red system. Now, picture that lifeline, the very backbone of emergency alerts, suddenly just gone, compromised, shut down, and held for ransom. That's the level of vulnerability we're diving into today. The Code Red platform, which is managed by Crisis 24, it suffered a massive cyber attack. This directly hit the emergency comms used by police, by fire departments, state agencies all over the country. And they didn't just lose data. They lost their main tool for rapid alerts and at the worst possible time. Oh, so let's really unpack this. Our mission here is a full forensic deep dive into this unsolved Code Red breach. We're going way beyond just, what was stolen, the names, addresses, passwords. We need to analyze the really profound structural failures that let this happen in the first place, the anatomy of the criminal group behind it, INC Lansom, and most importantly, the lessons here for everyone, for organizations and for you.
And that context is so critical. This was not your standard retail data breach. This was a direct attack on public safety infrastructure. So the immediate consequence was that right during a period of peak seasonal risk, I mean, think winter storms, wildfires, jurisdictions everywhere were forced to fall back on these drastically slower alternatives.
Like what? Manually posting on social media?
Exactly. Or relying on TV partnerships. When seconds count, the one system that's designed to save lives just failed because it was so vulnerable.
Okay, so let's start with the hard facts of the incident itself. Crisis 24 confirmed the breach was so bad, so complete, they had no choice. They had to completely decommission their legacy environment.
Right. They essentially had to pull the plug on the old Code Red systems and just start a painful rebuild from the ground up.
And before they even got it contained, the attackers had already exfiltrated a ton of sensitive information.
Oh, yeah. And we know what they took. It was resident names, physical addresses, email addresses, phone numbers, and this is the worst part, the actual passwords for Code Red user profiles.
That is the golden ticket for any follow-on attacks.
Absolutely.
So, what about the perpetrators? Who was behind this?
All the analysis points directly to one group, the INC Ransom Gang.
Okay, and they're a ransomware as a service operation, right? A RAAS group.
A pure Reyes operation.
Yeah.
They only popped up in July of 2023, but they built this ruthless, really indiscriminate reputation incredibly quickly.
What do you mean by indiscriminate?
Well, if you look at their victims, there's no pattern, no political motive, no ethical line they won't cross. It's purely financial. They've hit schools, healthcare providers, huge corporations like Yamaha Motor Philippines, Scotland's National Health Service, Ahold
But
Delhaize.
do they just hit whoever they think will pay?
Whoever will pay, exactly, regardless of the impact on the public.
Okay, here's where the timeline gets really interesting because it reveals just how deep the security failure went. The initial breach wasn't on the day the ransomware hit, it was way earlier.
Way earlier. The initial breach of Unsolved Systems was November 1st, 2025, but they didn't deploy the ransomware right away.
They just sat there.
They did. They had an extended period of what we call dwell time. They had persistent access for a full week until November 10th.
A week. That's a lifetime in cybersecurity.
It's an eternity. And during those 9 days, they weren't just sitting idle. They were mapping the entire network, finding the data, identifying the backups, and setting up multiple redundant ways to get back in.
So a 9-day dwell time suggests that whatever threat detection OnSolve had, it just failed.
It completely failed to see them moving around doing reconnaissance. When an attacker is in your systems for that long, it's not a single mistake. It's a total failure of continuous monitoring.
They were just acting like a resident in the network.
Exactly. They had time to shop around, find the most valuable data, like those customer databases, and make sure that when they finally launched their attack, it would do the most possible damage.
So the focus was all on the perimeter, and once the attacker got past that.
They had the run of the place. A classic failure of internal detection.
And the failures this breach revealed are, I mean, they're not new, they're decades old, which for a vendor handling life safety data is, it's just astonishing. When INC Ransom posted their proof, they included screenshots of the customer databases and the passwords.
Yeah.
They weren't encrypted or hashed, they were stored in clear text.
It's more than shocking, it's inexcusable negligence. I mean, for 30 years, the standard has been cryptographic hashing with salt values.
Right. Can you explain that for our listeners? Why is that the standard?
Sure. The reason is simple. If a database gets stolen, a hashed password just looks like a random string of characters. It's useless to the attacker.
But because OnSolve was storing them in plain text, stealing the data meant they got every single password.
Every single one. There was no layer of protection. This wasn't some sophisticated zero-day attack. This was just a basic failure of security hygiene.
And you have to ask the question, how does a vendor for police departments, for fire services, for state emergency agencies pass any kind of security audit with a standard that was considered unsafe in the late 90s?
It points to a huge gap, either in the government's oversight of these vendors or a catastrophic failure in the contracts that the agencies themselves set up.
And that failure made the operational side of this so much worse. Crisis 24 decides they have to rebuild the whole system. Which brings us to the second disaster here. The backup gap.
Right. When they went to restore the service, the most recent functional backup they could find was from March 31st, 2025.
Let me get this straight. An 8-month gap.
An 8-month void. Every new user who signed up, every address that was updated, every change in protocol made by a local jurisdiction between April and November.
Gone.
Just gone. Lost.
So this isn't a technical problem anymore. It's a life safety liability. I mean, imagine a police department adds their whole county to the system in July, or a state agency updates wildfire evacuation zones in September.
All of that critical life-saving data now has to be rebuilt manually from scratch.
And that burden falls on public safety staff who are already overworked. They should be focused on emergencies, not data entry.
And you have to wonder, why was there an 8-month gap? It suggests either the backup system was just silently failing for months, or, and this might be worse, they just weren't validating their backups.
They never checked to see if they actually worked.
Right. That level of data loss, it just screams a failure of basic auditing and governance.
To really understand why a group like INC Ransom is so effective, we have to look at the business model they represent. This industrialization of cybercrime. Ransomware as a service.
Yeah, Race has totally transformed cybercrime. It's a scalable business ecosystem now. Think of it like a criminal franchise.
The franchise model, okay.
The core developers, the people who actually write the really effective ransomware code, they don't do the attacks themselves. They license their tools out to affiliates, usually for a fee and a big cut of the final ransom payment.
So the developers are basically selling sophistication.
Exactly. An affiliate doesn't need to be some coding genius to cause this kind of devastation. They just need to be really good at one thing, getting inside a network.
Phishing, exploiting vulnerabilities, moving around unseen, a totally different skill set.
A completely different skill set. The Reyes developer might take, say, a 20 or 30% cut of the final ransom. And this division of labor makes the core creators incredibly hard for law enforcement to catch. They're left chasing the affiliates, the people who actually deploy the ransomware.
But if the model is so effective, why can't law enforcement just shut down the main development teams? I mean, are they just untouchable where they operate?
For the most part, yes. They're strategically protected. Most of these major Razov operators are based in jurisdictions that have minimal, if any, extradition treaties with Western countries. Or they're in nations that kind of quietly tolerate this activity as long as their own citizens aren't the targets.
And their whole operation is decentralized.
Totally decentralized, often cloud-based. So even if you disrupt one affiliate's operation, the core code, the infrastructure, and all the other affiliates just keep on going. It's a truly global dark web enterprise.
Okay, so since we know names, addresses, and plain text passwords were stolen, user action is not optional here. It's mandatory. If you ever, at any point, registered for a Code Red alert, you have to assume your credentials are now in the hands of this gang.
And your first priority isn't just your Code Red account. The biggest risk is all the other services where you reuse that same password.
Which almost everyone does to some extent.
Everyone does, and these threat actors, they rely on that. They use automated tools for what's called credential stuffing attacks. They take that stolen list of emails and passwords and they just blast it at thousands of other high-value sites. Amazon, PayPal, your bank, your main email account.
So if you reuse that password, your entire digital life is immediately at risk.
Immediately. The Reyes groups count on that human laziness for a second payday.
This means your own personal defenses have to be, well, ironclad. We can't stress this enough. You need to use unique, complex passwords for every single account. This is where a good password manager becomes essential.
It's the only practical way to do it securely. And beyond that, you must implement multi-factor authentication, MFA, wherever you can, especially on your most sensitive accounts.
Because even if an attacker has your password from this breach,
they still can't get into your bank or your email if that account requires a second code from an app on your phone. It just stops the credential stuffing attack cold.
Now, if we connect this all back to the bigger picture, the sources point to a really disturbing shift in the threat landscape. There used to be this kind of unwritten rule in the cyber underworld. You don't attack hospitals, critical infrastructure, emergency services.
That boundary is completely gone. Modern groups, driven by this purely financial Ray-Ass model, they seem to operate without any regard for the real-world harm their actions cause, the potential threat to human life.
Which means that systems that support life safety, emergency comms, water utilities, power grids, they're now high-priority targets.
They're high priority because the operators know these organizations might pay higher ransoms to get services back online immediately.
And it raises this urgent question, doesn't it? How do we secure these systems differently than we do regular commercial data? Should we really be relying on one centralized platform for public safety, creating this massive single point of failure that INC Ransom just exploited perfectly?
You know, that 9-day dwell time we talked about, it offers one of the most critical lessons for any organization in any industry. Your strategy has to be about detection and response, not just trying to stop the initial break-in.
Because if you have sophisticated detection, you can spot that lateral movement. You can see the reconnaissance, the data being staged, all the things that happen before the attacker actually drops the payload.
Right. You catch them while they're still just trying to figure out the map of your network.
And that's where layered defenses become so critical.
Absolutely. You need rapid vulnerability patching to close the easy doors.
Yeah.
And you absolutely need endpoint detection and response solutions, EDR.
EDR gives your security team that real-time visibility into everything happening on every device on the network. It spots the weird behavior that your perimeter defenses are going to miss.
And a really crucial architectural strategy here, one that could have limited the damage at Code Red, is network segmentation.
Ah, so you wall off different parts of the network from each other?
You wall them off. You divide your infrastructure into isolated zones. So, for example, the general corporate network where people check email should be totally separate from the highly restricted emergency alert databases.
So if an attacker gets into the low security part,
they can't just instantly hop over to the life safety systems. Proper segmentation forces them to conduct another, hopefully a detectable breach.
Okay, let's go back to that painful 8-month backup gap. That failure just underscores the need for modern recovery strategies built to defeat ransomware.
Modern backups have to be built around one word.
Yeah.
Immutability. Organizations need multiple generations of backups stored in immutable formats.
What does that mean exactly? Immutable.
It means the backups can't be changed or deleted. You can do this with tech, like cloud object locking or even physically air-gapped systems. This format prevents the ransomware or the attacker from encrypting or deleting your backups before they launch the main attack.
Because that's always their first move, right? Neutralize your ability to recover.
Always. If they can encrypt your live data and corrupt your backups, you have no choice. You either pay the ransom or you face what Code Red is facing now, manually rebuilding 8 months of lost data.
And this final point is so important. It's useless to have backups if you don't know they actually work.
It cannot be overstated. Organizations must routinely, maybe quarterly, test their full backup restoration process.
Run a simulation.
The full high-pressure simulation. Too many companies find out their backups are corrupt or incomplete in the middle of a real crisis when it's too late. Practice is essential for resilience.
So when you put it all together, what does this all mean? The Code Red incident is this perfect storm. It's the intersection of sophisticated, financially motivated cybercrime and a really genuine public safety vulnerability. We've seen an industrialized ROAS model exploit a basic, decades-old security flaw, the plaintext password, and it led to catastrophic consequences, an 8-month data loss.
And the true impact here is going to go beyond just the immediate cleanup. This public failure, I think, will accelerate two big industry shifts that you, the listener, should really watch for. First, we are likely going to see a big push towards more distributed emergency notification systems, moving away from the single vendor model that creates one giant target.
Again, the second shift.
Second, and maybe more importantly, regulators and government agencies are going to start demanding much more rigorous security standards in their contracts. Think mandatory third-party security certifications and non-negotiable annual audits for any vendor that serves these critical public safety functions. The market and the government now have to demand better.
A structural shift is the critical takeaway. But on a personal level, if you take one single action away from our deep dive today, let it be this. Secure your own credentials. The Coder ID data is already out there. If you don't use a password manager, get one today. And turn on multi-factor authentication for your email, your banking, your social media. Your personal security is the first line of defense against these industrial-scale operations.